why. But the end result was that Barber choked Stevenson to death in the parking lot of that 7-Eleven. So we would, again, like to offer that clarification. These issues are always really complex and difficult, especially looking at things historically. And we appreciate the feedback from our listeners urging clarification and to really focus on and take time to describe these details. So please, thank you for getting in touch with us, and please don't hesitate to get in touch with us again. And again, we'd like to thank Maria Cahill and Mark Woodleaf, and that's Totality of Circumstances.
Thank you for listening, and you can reach out to us if you have any feedback or questions or concerns, or if you think we should all be quiet. You can contact us at totalityradio@gmail.com. Again, I'm Sam.
I'm Jasmine.
Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 6 p.m. at KBOO, and next up is Transpositive PDX with your host, Emma.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a public affairs director to manage public affairs programming, ensuring that it is of the highest quality and consistent with the KBOO programming charter. For this 32 hours position, we are looking for someone with production experience, experience in community radio, who has communication and training skills, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Friday, October 25th at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/PADHIRE2019.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a talk by Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center. Vitale directs the Brooklyn College Policing and Social Justice Project. He wrote The End of Policing. He demonstrates that the great expansion of police authority has come to exacerbate the very problems they're supposed to solve. He discusses how to counter the warrior mentality and police reliance on force and weaponry, and describes actually operating successful alternatives. But he insists that no reform will substantially succeed unless this country deals with deeply entrenched inequalities and injustice. Again, that's Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center, 1825 Southwest Broadway. Imagine a world beyond policing. That's no impossible dream. More information can be found on kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. My name is Emma and I am a co-host here on Transpositive. Tonight we are here for Alan with preference. Alan's taking the week off. He will be back in 2 weeks. But we are doing a show kind of in the theme of something that Alan might do. Tonight we have on the December 1st writers, David and Sylvia, and we're going to be talking about coming out during the early years of the AIDS crisis. And so welcome, David and Sylvia.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So first of all, my name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns. And if you could both introduce yourselves and let us know how you prefer to be referred and that sort of thing.
Of course. So I'm David Rutheiser. I use he, him, his pronouns when referring to myself. I'm a gay man. I came out on February 19th, 1991, when I was almost 23 years old here in Portland. Let's see. I sing. I write poetry. I'm an avid folk dancer and folk dance teacher. Let's see. I have an MFA in creative writing and a TESOL certificate, and I tutor English. and I'm really excited to be here.
Great. Well, really happy to have you here, too. And Sylvia?
Yeah, I'm Sylvia Zingaser, and my connection is my oldest son, Aaron, died from AIDS in 1992. And that has gotten me into the work of being an advocate for people with AIDS, but also for people who are living with a mental illness. I also am a member of NAMI, Multnomah, National Alliance on Mental Illness, because my youngest son lives with a mental illness. And there is a long history of mental illness in my family. But my oldest son, Aaron, is the one who really guided me to become an advocate. He died in 1992. We're not sure when he was first infected. We kind of thought possibly that might have been as early as like 1976, 78, and that era. And as a result, I started writing down the conversations that I had with him, because I didn't want to forget some of the things that he said. And that became a book of poetry called Scared of That. And so I worked on that for several years. The first part of it I actually wrote in his voice, as if I were the gay man. He did have a chance to read that before he died. And then afterwards, it's in three different sections. So it's him at the last 2 years of his life, and then it's the section of him really getting sick and ultimately dying, and then it is the third section is afterwards and how I dealt with it.
Well, today is a really powerful day to be talking about this. We're only we're about a month and a half out from World AIDS Day, which is December 1st. And so we'll be talking about that. For some of us, like for me personally, today's a really significant day because it's Yom Kippur, which
that's
is, I think you said that that's, is that when your son passed away?
He passed away in 1992, and Yom Kippur was the day that he actually died.
Yeah. So today is also the day that the Supreme Court heard the case of Harris Funeral Homes versus the EEOC, which was a case brought by the Trump administration against Amy Stevens. Amy Stevens is a transgender woman who came out while she was at work. And she came into work one day and she said, "I'm transgender, and starting next week, I'm going to be coming to work wearing a dress." And within 2 weeks, she was fired. And she was told by her employer that they cannot have someone like her working at their establishment, that it was bad for business and their customers wouldn't understand. And she filed a civil rights lawsuit claiming discrimination based on title, based on sex discrimination. And so that's actually the case that's being heard right now by the conservative Supreme Court. So we all kind of have our fingers crossed right now that we're not going to be taking a step backwards, but that's where we are right now. So anyways, let's get to the subject tonight, which is coming out during the age of the AIDS crisis. We all remember 1984. I remember 1984 really well. 1983 was really when we first started hearing. Well, 1981 was when things first started really becoming visible, really visible in the community. But 1984 was the first year of really like massive public awareness, like not just within like the broader community, but also just within the queer community. So I remember 1984 really well. I was 14 years old. So, and I can't imagine what it would be like to be aware anytime between like 1984 and 1992 that like, you know, like to come to an awareness of your identity as a queer person, and to be faced with the overwhelming, you know, fear and the stigma that was really going on at that time, the just blatant homophobia. So let's talk about that, David.
Yes. So Actually, that leads really well into the first poem I was going to share tonight. We are December 1st writers, and we are three poets and another writer. So the four people in the group are me, Sylvia, our friend Pat Vivian, who's a local poet, who wrote at the time that I came out and just before, she was writing a lot of poems about three gay male friends of hers that she had taken care of, I believe because they had been disowned by their own families, and taking care of them as they lived with and then died of AIDS. And so I would hear her read these poems. She was, as far as I remember at that time, really the only one I knew of in Portland who was writing poems on, you know, on the AIDS crisis from a personal experiential standpoint. And so managed to keep in touch with her over the years. Our fourth member is Marla Allen, who lives in San Francisco. And she was, maybe you want to tell the story a little bit about Marla's connection, and then I'll read my poem.
Marla was in my son's support group from Jewish Family and Children's Services in San Francisco. She was the only woman in that group. All of them were gay men except for one man who had contracted AIDS from a blood transfusion. All of those men that were in that group, all are gone. Marla is the only one left, and she's about 56, 57 years old. So she's lived with AIDS for over 25 years now. And she has started writing, seriously writing. And she has quite a story to tell about what she went through and her transformation. That it took a long time for her to get to where she's at now. Last year, she had a massive heart attack. And we thought, oh my goodness. Because we almost lost her to AIDS before she started taking the protease inhibitors. And I remember sitting in bed with her to try to get the protease inhibitors down her and to get her. And I had another gay friend who was living with AIDS. And he was an older gentleman, and he came over to help me to try to encourage her to take the medication. And I called her sister, and her sister called her mother. They came up to San Francisco from L.A. to get her and to take her back home so that they could, you know, get her started and get her redirected, because she almost died from that. And then once she got started on the protease inhibitors, that's what kept her alive. But last year, we almost lost her to a heart attack. But she's doing very well now.
It's hard to... I think that people nowadays, at a time when, like, we have PrEP, you know, you can take... I mean, there's medication you can literally take before you have sex to prevent HIV transmission, which is amazing. It's a miracle. And then we have AZT. We have all these treatments now that, like, you know, the first person with HIV to turn 100 just celebrated his birthday a couple of weeks ago. And so it's a different time now. I mean, in the 1980s, it wasn't just that this crisis was happening. Mm-hmm. It was that people now may not understand that in the 1980s, being queer was so stigmatized. It was stigmatized in a way that continued the legacy of how queerness was stigmatized until very recently. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is before gay marriage. This is before people were out. This is before, you know, we had groups like Basic Rights Oregon, before we had the Human Rights Campaign, really before we had anything, when people were still referred to by, like, slurs, and, you know, there was just... there was this sense that of social opprobrium, that it was, you know, taboo. It was, you know, we were still waiting, even in the 1980s, for Supreme Court cases like the Texas case that, like, finally outlawed that finally overturned the sodomy bans. You know, these laws are still in the books all the way up until the early 2000s. So anyways, so let's talk. I'm just going to turn it over to you because otherwise I will just talk. I can talk and talk and talk. And this is not about me. So go ahead, David.
So this is a poem that I wrote called Be Careful. And I want to mention, you know, coming out in 1991, like you were saying, when there was a lot of stigma, the Oregon Citizens Alliance was trying to make us illegal. They would keep coming back and back with all these ballot measures so that, you know, if a teacher was found to be gay or thought to be gay, they could be fired. Books would be pulled off of library shelves and so on. So that's the environment I came out into. So this poem, and it, I guess, is a coming out poem in a way. And it's also, I also want to mention that, I'll read it first and then I'll mention the other thing. This is called Be Careful. My father's admonition lurked in shadows, always, like a predator. Now, we folk dance friends drive to a leaf-canopied house where Danny turns splotch brown as steadily as an aging pear. Kaposi sarcoma, a friend tells me later, whose own son will soon succumb. All those years I heard my father's warning as, you'd better not be gay, when he meant this. And Danny was a friend of ours from folk dancing. So I met Sylvia because of Israeli and international folk dancing in Portland when I was 20 years old in 1988. Mm-hmm. And so she and I, Danny was one of the first people I saw getting sick with AIDS. And so, of course, the person who explains to me that it's Kaposi sarcoma, whose own son dies, is Sylvia. So Sylvia wound up in this poem, too.
And so for people who don't know the language, what was Kaposi sarcoma?
Well, Kaposi sarcoma originally was thought to be just elderly Jewish men of Mediterranean, such as living in Israel. So when young men started showing up with this Kaposi sarcoma, they didn't know what to do about it.
But these for were some like blotches.
Yeah, there was blotches. Uh-huh. And the thing that, you know, that not only would they get the blotches on the outside of the skin, they would also could have these blotches on internal vital organs.
Yeah.
And so you could actually, over time, die from Kaposi sarcoma.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't see it anymore. Very seldom do you see it like we did in the 80s. And it was like you could see young men whose whole faces were maybe big splotches of purple patches. It was devastating because for a gay man to be marked by splotches was really difficult. It would be for anybody.
Sure.
But it's generally speaking, you didn't find women with Kaposi sarcoma. It was mostly men.
Yeah, right. And it was one of the ways in which people responded to this new autoimmune disorder, which we had very little information about at that time.
Right, right.
Yeah. So for me, you know, part of what came out in this poem too was this feeling I see now of almost as though by being gay, I was automatically going to get AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those two were just synonymous.
Right.
You know, my father warned me; he was afraid I was going to automatically get AIDS. At least that's the impression that I got. So yeah.
So it's like this strange kind of double burden of like going against a social taboo in the first place. Mm-hmm. Just in order to like claim your authentic queerness. And then on top of that, there's this disease, which is almost like the Black Plague.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that it was striking queer communities, especially in like New York and San Francisco, that was just devastating and really overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. And at the time I came out, you know, so many people had already died,
yeah,
of course, and so many people were sick at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for I just never even assumed that I, in my poetry, had the right to even really talk about AIDS,
yeah,
because so many people were much closer to it and had lost people that they had a chance to be closer to. By the time I came out, people were already dying.
And it changed the culture in some ways. It changed queerness. Like, it didn't change how queerness was expressed, but like the fear that it engendered changed queerness in some really fundamental ways. And I think we're only now starting to kind of come back around to like exploring so many things that were learned about queerness in the 70s before the AIDS crisis, like basically decimated a generation. There were so many important lessons, I feel like, that, you know, groups like the Radical Fairies, which I'm familiar with, brought to the discussion of queerness and what queerness means in contrast to like cis heteronormativity that, like, mm-hmm, I think we're only beginning now to like reclaim as like really valuable and important expressions of human activity. So anyways, let's talk about, can we talk about your son a little bit?
Sure.
So yeah. Tell me about your son.
Oh, he said to me at one point, "Mom, I'm the only daughter you're going to have." He was a flaming queen. And one time he had a picture of himself in drag. Uh-huh. And he said, "You can hang that on the wall. Just tell people that's Aunt Midge." So anyway, he was very funny. He had a lot of humor. Even as he was dying, he had a lot of humor.
Uh-huh. Wow. Would you like to read a poem about your son? Or
sure. You know, David brings up the fact that in 1992, you know, the early 90s, that we had the Oregon Citizens Alliance. I believe that was Ron Maybaum.
Lon Maybaum.
Yeah.
And then another of their leaders was Scott Lively.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So the Oregon
right.
Citizens Alliance, was this like a good thing or a bad thing?
So Oregon Citizens Alliance, yeah, it sounds pretty innocent, but the Oregon Citizens Alliance was a very right-wing, dangerous, radical group who, you know, they did a number of things to when they saw that their at the time we just said gay and lesbian, I don't remember bi or trans being on people's radar screens at that time. They wanted to make gays and lesbians illegal. And they also put a number of anti-abortion ballot measures on. Yeah. So it seemed like after the what we would now say anti-LGBTQ ballot measures were defeated, albeit quite narrowly, it was very frightening.
Yeah.
There was no guarantee that those ballot measures would fail.
Yeah.
But they just kept coming back with one ballot measure after another in each subsequent election cycle. Uh-huh. In fact, I remember my mother, you know, fortunately, you know, was very, you know, she hated the Oregon Citizens Alliance. She had a no on 9, which was one of their ballot measures signs. And when they came back a few years later with 13, she put it back out and she crossed out the 9 and she put 13 underneath it. And she thought, well, I might as well keep this sign because, yeah, you know, we keep having to need it.
Yeah.
But it did seem like after the LGBTQ ones almost passed, but they didn't. Then for a while, the Oregon Citizens Alliance turned their attention to the abortion issue. I don't know what's happened to Lon Maybaum, but there is a documentary about what happened to another of their leaders, a man named Scott Lively. He wound up going to Uganda.
I heard about this.
They made a documentary about him and his followers called God Loves Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went to Uganda and tried to indoctrinate the people there against GLBTQ folk.
Yeah, every now and then there's a story on This Way Out about something going on in Uganda now.
Right,
that
right.
It had its origin in that.
So yeah. this was the environment I came out into, and I mean, looking back, I realized I was really afraid.
Yeah.
You know, is someone going to beat me? Is someone going to shoot me?
Welcome to my world.
It was very it was a very frightening. I mean, and to a degree, I think it still really is.
Yeah.
In some other ways now. So that's a little bit about the OCA.
Yeah.
My son was attacked twice. He was attacked once here in Portland. And they beat him up and took his backpack. And somebody at Portland State found his backpack and brought it to the house. And, of course, the money was gone. And then the second time that he was attacked by some drug addicts that cornered him and wanted to march him to his bank to get money out of the bank, which they did. He told them, do not hit me because I have AIDS and I do not want to spread this to you, in spite of the fact that they were stealing, extorting money from him.
Yeah.
And they did hit him. They knocked his, they broke his jaw in three places. And this is like a year before he really got sick and started to die. And so he had, and at that particular time, he was, this was after his, we call him his lover that he took care of. It was a year after his lover had passed away that this happened to him.
Oh,
gosh. A friend of his went down, who was a nurse, went down to San Francisco, brought him back to Portland, and we took care of him up here for a while, and then he went back. But he had his mouth was wired shut for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And, yes, so he went through that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It can happen to you, and yeah. It's no wonder that people are afraid.
Yeah,
and he couldn't even reason with these people.
Right,
they were so out of it. The money they needed for drugs.
Yeah,
never mind that they would be exposed to AIDS.
Wow. Well, we're gonna take just a little break, and then when we come back, let's get to your first poem,
okay.
Sylvia, because we haven't even gotten to your first poem yet.
Okay.
And we are back. Tonight you're listening to Transpositive. We're here tonight for Alan. Alan asked us to fill in for Preference. Preference will be back in 2 weeks. But just a heads up that Queer Boo is going to be looking for some new programmers. We're going to have an opening probably starting in November for one or two slots a month. Starting sometime in November or December. So if you are a queer person, if you're someone who identifies as a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, non-binary, any place on the spectrum, and you are listening to KBOO and you have something that you feel really passionate about, something that you want to share, please get in touch with us here at KBOO at 503-231-8187 or stop down here at KBOO. You can also check us out online at kboo.fm because we are looking for someone to do one or two slots on Queer Boo, which is every Tuesday at 6 p.m. And we would love if you would add your voice to the community, especially if you are an LGBTQIA person of color. We will definitely be giving preference to people of color programmers who would be interested in filling in those slots. So come on down to KBOO, fill out a program application, and get your show started. So Sylvia, let's get to your first poem about Jonathan.
This is from my book called Scared of That, Living While Dying of AIDS. And I'm going to read you from when I came back from San Francisco. I flew back, I'm pretty sure, on the same plane that my son's body was flown back to Portland. I was pretty upset over the OCA and how all that was coming down, because I knew this wasn't a choice for him. This is who he was.
Right.
And that's, you know, I had decided and understood and had observed that he was born gay, and I had one psychologist said he was conceived gay. And I don't know, you know, that's another big topic about whether this is genetic or not. And was anybody going to talk about it in the past if there were other gay family members in my family? No, they weren't going to talk about that. That's not something that they would share. But anyway, this is called Fearful Hierarchies. When I came back to Portland, after my son had died, the Oregon Citizens Alliance was in full tilt with their campaign against gays and lesbians. My anger burned as they vomited like volcanoes from the Ring of Fire. Look at all the trash in the libraries, Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass, Emily Dickinson's poems, Gertrude Stein's autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, Tennessee Williams' Streetcar Named Desire, and you don't want one for a neighbor, it might rub off on you. The OCA tried to convince everyone, even blacks and Jews, they tried to enlist, saying, the Bible says. These pillowcase knights hate anyone different. I wanted to shake the lawn maybombs and say, wake up, foolish ones, look around, check the facts. Talk with your gay and lesbian and bisexual people. You, too, are sexual with a history. You must have forgotten how it was when you were 16, driven by the testosterone lying thick in your veins. The fear-driven ballot measure cut deep into my core with its family values, which meant, off with your heads, you heathen ones, let's burn you at the stake.
Wow, yeah, that's how it felt. That's really, yeah, thank you.
It was a hard time.
Yeah, yeah.
And getting people to understand that this is who people were, and if someone could swing from being gay to being straight, chances are they really were bisexual. But nobody's not talking. People are now talking. It's kind of the same thing as mental health. We are now talking.
Yeah,
these were both very taboo discussions.
Well, it's just so funny that people were even trying to do it back then, you know, like, mm-hmm. I mean, nowadays, I think there's more people now who would be like, well, why are you even trying to make somebody what they're not?
Right.
But then people still thought you could do that. You could just, you know, make somebody into something else.
Or don't talk about it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Our family doesn't talk about that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, and unfortunately, there still are people who are trying to turn people, for lack of a better word, turn people not gay.
Yeah.
Even now. So, like, I mean, I don't take for granted that everyone has that chance, even now.
Right. Which, because they don't. I mean, we have at least half this country voted for this demagogue who's in office, and anyone who's coming out in those kinds of communities is pretty much up against the same thing that they were in Portland in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's that's still their reality. And in a lot of southern states, this is still their reality. In rural Oregon, I mean, mm-hmm. there's lots of places where
it's not safe.
It's not safe, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to give a little plug to the HIV Day Center. Can I do that?
Oh, please, yeah.
Yeah, well, while we're thinking about it. Last year, I gave them copies of my book. So if anybody is ever interested in buying the book of poetry, they have it at the HIV Day Center, which is housed at Angsworth United Church of Christ. You have to go. David knows how to get that down there.
Yeah,
you can navigate that.
Yeah, it's on 30th and Ainsworth.
Yeah. That's correct.
Northeast 30th
it's over,
and Ainsworth.
Yeah, it's over by Concordia.
Yes, mm-hmm. it's...
Right,
yes.
Right.
And every year, The Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon does a fundraiser for the HIV Day Center, and David and I read there last year.
Oh, you did? Yeah, we did. I've been to the benefit before. Yeah. It's really fun. Yeah.
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah. And it's coming up. I talked to Chris Ives today to ask him if he would be okay if I put a plug in for them. Their email address is hivcenter@emoregon.org, and that's emoregon.org, hivcenter@, and that stands for Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon.
And it's so, just like to understand the space, it's a space where people can go if they have HIV during the day.
That's correct.
It's kind of like, it's a place where you can go and hang out with other people who have HIV.
Right.
They do like classes, they do workshops, they have just like
a lot
of space. Yeah, you can get something to eat. They have counselors. It's a safe space. And it's really well supported by the community, I think.
Their hours are 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday and Tuesday, Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to let people know the phone number is 503-460-3822 if you want to give them a call or just drop in.
Great.
And they can pick up the Scared of That there, or, you know, go volunteer.
I'm great.
Yeah, and or if you have a need, go and check them out.
Thank you. So, David, let's hear another poem from you. What have you got?
Okay, thank you. So this one is called After the Parade. And I'll mention, you mentioned Radical Fairies. That's a group that I've been involved with off and on since about 1997. That's the community I'm part of. This is about a person I met through the Radical Fairy community here in Portland, and I've changed his name. But this is called After the Parade. The man two folding chairs away, who passed out in the August heat, slumping to the pavement, knocking over the arrowed sign that reads Antiques, is sitting upright, wiping his face from the water someone threw, able to tell the paramedics his name. And no, he's not a diabetic. And though the danger seems past, I'm thinking how years ago a friend, diabetic, HIV positive, so big he could barely walk, sleeping on a mattress black with mold from his night sweats. I should get a plastic bag to seal that in, he'd said. Paid me to wipe his blood from the walls. While he discussed world religion, I collected the half-emptied frozen food trays that littered the floor. Once, a neighbor came. Gary, you can't let it get like this. And he, just back from the hospital, told her by Christmas he should be driving again. Gary needs assisted living, a mutual friend had said. And though just 61, he only had me and the young nurse who visited once a week, tingling over his swollen limbs. I love wound care. In the January ice storm, they went in and found Gary dead on that bed, a heart attack. And I ask myself, is this some kind of man thing? How even we gay guys learn to tough it out, say we're okay, that we can take care of it ourselves. And is this why Steve, when I tell him he has apnea, that he's swallowing his tongue in his sleep, apologizes, embarrassed to have kept me awake? The point, Steve, I wanted to tell him, is to prevent yourself from dying. Or is death itself a neglect, as I, two chairs from near death, remind myself about the heat, crack open a water bottle, and drink?
Wow. Thank you. Can you tell me a little bit about that poem, David? What inspired that poem?
It started out from the... just from being in at the parade. Was at the Multnomah Days Parade, and that particular year it was blazing hot. That the day, so the Multnomah Village area is in southwest Portland, and it's this little quaint area of stores and restaurants mostly along one street, for listeners who may not be familiar. And every summer they have a parade. It's sort of like a small town style parade. And I was sitting in two chairs down or so. This man passed out, and somehow that triggered all of these other thoughts for me about this person I call Gary in the poem, and my having tried so hard to take care of him. He had asked for help, preferably from someone else from the Radical Fairy community. So I had gone over to his apartment a few times, and he was clearly not capable of taking care of himself. So that's where everything else came from, in that poem. Yeah.
David, what are the Radical Fairies?
So they're a group that's, there are different Radical Fairy communities across the U.S. and indeed around the world. Yeah. And, they are based on the teachings of Harry Hay, who wrote the book Radically Gay. And there's also a documentary called Hope Along the Wind, The Life of Harry Hay, that people can see if they want more information about him. But what I do know about him is that he first started something called the Mattachine Society.
Right.
Yeah. And...
that was like one of the first places where people were really openly queer.
Right. This was back in the 50s. Yes. Yes. But he eventually came to the belief that, I mean, I'm skipping over a lot of things in his life, but basically the conclusion he came to was that he believed that gay people were spiritually different. And that there was a purpose for us, just exactly the way we are. Mm-hmm. And so he was very interested in gayness from like more of a spiritual standpoint.
Yeah.
And so there are different Radical Fairy gatherings. There's a coffee clatch that happens here in Portland on Saturday mornings, and other community events that can be partaken in, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how I met this person in the poem. So I guess I wound up talking in the poem about how isolated we still can be. You know, especially as gay men, you know, a lot of us don't have families of our own. We might have been disowned by our families of origin. And we might not have, you know, biologically, at least, children of our own to take care of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, this person got really isolated, even though certainly, I should not imply that I was the only one who tried to help this person. There were other people who tried to step in. And then it also got me to thinking about, you know, what's really going on here? You know, are we, as gay men at least, so conditioned still as males to be like, oh, I'm okay, I don't need any help?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Sylvia, let's go back to you. Would you care to share another poem with us?
Sure. Great. One of the things that I can tell you is that it's been 27 years since my son passed away, and he passed away October 10th, 1992, which happened to be Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
And so this time of year is, it's really special for me to be able to come and be on your show tonight, because...
Yeah. It's his yard site.
Yes, uh-huh. It is his yard site. And so I'll read you the day that he died, because he woke up to die.
Yeah.
The night before, Rabbi Weiss had came in to see him, and he leaned over the bed and to his ear and said, Aaron, tomorrow is the day that Moses died. And so I'll start this poem from there. And this is called Rainbow Butterfly. Aaron, tomorrow is the day that Moses died, Rabbi Weiss said to me. This is in Aaron's voice, by the way. Is it time? Today, tomorrow is here. I look at the walls of soft pink, covered with pictures, posters, cards, and feather boas that look like red mink. This is my room. I know why I'm here. He was in hospice at this time. The warm morning sunbeams through illuminating pots and vases of flowers, lines of light fan out to touch the end of my bed. Leo, my breath is going. Today I spread my wings. This is really hard work. Jonah, comfort me. Mom may not make it in time. Mary, sit with me. You can keep me company. Sandy, is that you? I reach out to touch her hand. Mom, you are here. You're here. She climbs in bed with me. Jim, there you are. Behind my mom, you stand. Irving, standing by the door to share my final event. Janet, can I have more? Cocktail time it is. Yes, my eyes, I cannot see. Everyone grab an arm and a leg. I want to be touched. The oxygen line, I hand it back. My mom begins to talk. Aaron, do you remember Valentine waits under a big oak tree for Richard? Your Bob is there too. Wait under that tree, and someday Richard and I will join you there. Aaron, I see you burst out of your cocoon, a butterfly to be. And there you are flying over the rainbow with your beautiful butterfly wings. Now you're coming back under the rainbow with gentle poise and magnificence. You turn and glide into the rainbow. Each color touches the tips of your butterfly wings. Puppy, Janet says to me, open up. It is time. With my right hand in Sandy's hands and my left hand in Mom's hands, as a lighted candle's bursting brightness fills my room, I look at it as best I can and begin to take that final step. But before I do, I want you to know I love you all. Shalom.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
He did wake up to die.
Why don't we take a little break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about that poem a little bit.
I felt all flushed with fever, embarrassed by the crowd. I felt he found my letters and read each one out loud. I prayed that he would finish, but he just kept right on strumming my pain with his fingers.
One time.
Singing my life with his words.
All right, and we're back. We've got about 10 minutes left. I can't believe how fast this time has gone. That was so powerful. So tell me about that poem, Sylvia. What's going on here?
Well, he had been in hospice. He had decided, I had taken care of him in his apartment for 4 months. I took off about 7 months from work to be with him. And then a month afterwards, I needed to heal. So I went back and spent time in San Francisco. One of the things that I did for myself was to take Russian character dance lessons from Leonid Shigalov at the Russian Center. And so I would take private lessons and then group lessons at the Russian Center. That's what I did for myself. I couldn't go to movies, but I could go dance, because dance is something to me that's really important. And actually, it was really important to Aaron.
So dancing helped you heal.
Yeah, I would have to say that's the thing that kept me going was dancing.
Yeah, and that's how you and David.
Yeah,
that's how we two are friends, through dance.
That's right.
Yeah,
and that's also where I met Aaron Arney.
That's right. Well, that was a dance party. I think he might have come to one of the folk dances, but we had a gathering, and David was there at that gathering, uh-huh. And David met Aaron at that point.
Now, see, I know I've told you this already, but I don't remember that part.
Yeah,
I remember meeting him when he came to the Jewish Community Center. Yeah. We were Israeli folk dancing.
That's right. He did.
That's the only time I remember having met him. Uh-huh. But Sylvia says there was this other time when I was.
It's funny what we remember.
Yeah, I only remember meeting him at the Jewish Community Center at Israeli dancing. Yeah. So that would have been 1990 or so.
That was about 1990. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say.
Did your son like to dance?
He loved to dance. Yes, he loved to dance.
So that's something you all had in common. Then.
Yes.
Right.
And
that's maybe something that helped sustain him.
Right, right.
How long was he able to dance for a long time, even after he had...
Oh, yes, he continued until he got really sick.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's one of the things that he would do is dance. He wasn't a folk dancer, but he just thought it was just fabulous that Mother had found folk dancing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he really supported that.
And Sylvia was really the first... person from the folk dance community. I go to many different kinds of folk dancing in Portland, and she was really the first one I came out to as gay of the folk dancers.
So David, you were able, in spite of knowing what was going on around you with people dying of HIV, mm-hmm. and you know, all the negative ways that people were being treated, but in spite of all that, you were able to come out during this time. And what was that like for you?
Well, and that's also how I started writing again, because I started writing, I started going to a gay men's adult children of alcoholics meeting in Portland. So that's where I first came out as a gay man. And then I started going to a 12-step writing group. And that's how I started writing poetry again, which I had done when I was 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so that's part of how that unfolded, you know.
So writing helped you with your coming out process.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And helped you with navigating the landscape of kind of exploring your identity.
Yeah, and there were a few groups that I was in. Certainly PFLAG was a tremendous help, which I had thought was, you know, just for other people. I met another gay man, actually, who was going to PFLAG, which used to stand for Parents, Family, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. They no longer use that as sort of it's still called PFLAG, but they no longer say lesbians and gays, of course, because it's not inclusive enough. But I met another gay man who was going to PFLAG, and he encouraged me to go. So that's another group that was really supportive besides that one gay men's ACOA group.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So we're just about running out of time. Sylvia, if there's one other thing that you would like people to know about your son, what would you like people to know about him?
That this wasn't a choice for him. And that he loved life. One of the things that he said to me, he said one of the things that bothered him the most is that he would be forgotten, because so many people, you know, had died from AIDS, and that all of these young men were not going to be remembered. He was 31 and a half years old when he passed away.
He was 31 when he passed away?
Yeah.
How long had he been living with HIV? When
that we knew, so he would have been, he had been living with it since, he was diagnosed in 86,
so
86, 87.
Okay, yeah. So when he was 26, but you think he probably had it?
We talked to him, he and I, he was very open with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. he and I both thought possibly, you know, when he was having his first sexual experiences, we didn't know that the disease was out there. It was probably 1976, 77, 78, someplace in there. And one of the things that he really wanted me to do, he says, Mom, you have to tell them. You have to tell the young people about this disease. We have to talk about how people get STDs.
Yeah.
Sexually transmitted diseases. He said, some of these diseases kill people. We know that at that point in time, it was killing people.
Yeah, it was.
And so, and it's not a disease that you want to get.
No.
You know, and that if he were alive today, he would probably be really working with young people not to expose themselves, even though there are drugs out there.
Yeah.
And that's been a huge issue is, don't get infected if you use safe sex.
Right.
Use safe sex.
So your son, if he was live today, would be giving us the safe sex lecture right now on the radio.
Right. Yes, he would. He would do that. Yeah. Because he knows how it affected him. And it's a long-term illness now.
Yeah.
And sometimes not everybody can take the medications. And that's something that everybody needs to think about.
The risks are still
there. The risks are still there. They are with other sexually transmitted diseases.
Yeah. Well, we are out of time, so let's just let people know, how can they get in touch with the December 1st writers? Are you going to be reading anytime soon? Are you having any...
Well, we hope to read at the... hopefully at the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon again, like we did last year. That's such a wonderful event. We do have a website, which is December1stWriters.com. I have a website, which is CreativeDavid.
That's a good one.
.com. So, and I have a link to all the things that I'm involved with, including December 1st Writers.
Marla Allen.
And Marla has a website.
Yes, Marla Allen, yes.
And then our fourth member is Pat Vivian. It's V-I-V-I-A-N. So these are two other wonderful writers.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I can't believe the hour goes so fast. Like, I thought we were going to get through like a whole bunch of poems, but it's like we got through four, which is...
Yeah.
That's actually pretty good. Like,
yes,
if I was
is.
Doing a poetry class, that'd be pretty good. Just get through four poems. So thank you so much
thank
for being
you.
With us tonight. We've been here tonight with David
Rutizer.
And Sylvia.
Sylvia Zingasser.
Thank you. Yeah. And if people would like to reach either of you, reach out to you, how can they get in touch with you guys? Just through those websites? Or?
I don't have a website, but I have an email, which is ariella@hevanet.com, and that's H-E-V, like in Victor, A-N-E-T.com. And Ariella is spelled A-R-I-E-L-A.
Great, thank you.
You could probably get in touch with me on Facebook, although I'm not very active on it. You can send me something and I'll click on it. I'm not what you would call active on Facebook.
Okay.
And I'm David Rutizer, and it's R-U-T as in Thomas, I-E-Z as in zebra, E-R. I am on Facebook. I do have the website that I mentioned, creativedavid.com. Those are two ways to
good ways to
reach me.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on Transpositive tonight, and hopefully we'll have you back again sometime real soon.
Thank you.
Transpositive is now airing the first and third Tuesdays of every month, so we will actually be back next week with regular Transpositive. And thanks so much to Sami, our engineer, and y'all have a good night.
Like a dozen.
You are just listening to Transpositive PDX. You are tuned in to KBOO, KBOO, Portland. The time at KBOO is 6:59. Next up is Calculated Conversation with David and Ken. The show is not live today. It has been pre-recorded. So stay tuned for that after these short promos.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a public affairs director to manage public affairs programming, ensuring that it is of the highest quality and consistent with the KBOO programming charter. For this 32 hours position, we are looking for someone with production experience, experience in community radio, who has communication and training skills, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Friday, October 25th at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/PADHire2019.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 10 Spiders 30EP release party on Saturday, October 10th at 8 p.m. at the White Eagle Saloon in Portland. 10 Spiders play bluesy roots rock and will be releasing their 30EP that night. They'll be playing with EcoCheck, an indie alt rock band, and Flying Caravan, who plays psych folk. Again, that's the 10 Spiders 30EP release party on Saturday, October 10th at 8 p.m. at the White Eagle Saloon. 836 North Russell Street in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Yo, man, it's a lot of brothers out there flaking and perpetrating but scared to kick reality.
Man, you've been doing all this dope producing. You ain't had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
Spread yourself.